It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the rumor edition, because Renee Ritchie from iMore is in studio. Is there going to be an iPhone 5S in June? We'll find out. Stay tuned. Mac Break Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 343, recorded March 26th, 2013. Full of Schmidt. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your direction, such as affordable business and personal documents you can trust. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code MBW to receive $10 off at checkout. And by Pond5, the world's stock media marketplace. If you're a media maker looking for videos, photos, illustrations, music, sound effects, After Effects templates, or 3D models, check out Pond5. And for an exclusive 50 free stock media files, go to pond5.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers all your Macintosh news. Here from the beautiful Brickhouse Studios in downtown Petaluma, California. And I say that because Renee Ritchie found his way here from Montreal.
And I used Apple Maps to do it, sir.
Are we on Apple Maps?
Door to door. Yes.
Wow.
My location was on the right.
Your location. Did, nice lady. Is it the Siri voice?
Yes, it is. The nuanced Siri lady.
Yeah. Your location is on the right. You have arrived. I'd show you a picture, but we're not Google, damn it. Well, good. I'm glad you made it. Nice to have you from iMore.com. Good time for you to be here. The rumors are flying fast and furious. Also with us, Andy Iannocco, tech columnist at the Chicago Sun-Times.
Hello.
Hello. No hat.
No, I left my hat upstairs.
You know, I have that happen to me. Once I get wired in to my seat, it's such a major effort to leave that I just don't go anywhere.
No, actually it was more because of like this. Tuesday mornings are usually so busy that this might be one of the two or three times a week I don't actually like wash my hair.
Oh, wow.
I did actually wash my hair this morning. And so, okay.
You want your freak flag to fly.
This is unfortunate. This is unfortunately as good as my hair actually.
You're getting as gray as I am, Andrew.
Okay.
Like, I started growing that beard and I gave up, you know, but I did note that I would have had mutton chops like that actually might have been a little less gray than yours. Yours are very gray. Or is that blonde?
No, they're gray.
Yeah.
Nope.
But again, he's a young man. He's still a young man.
Oh, young-ish. That's, thank you. But bless your heart.
And, you know, it's good to have hair. That's the thing. Of any kind. And also with us from Valencia.
Valencia,
Spain. Mike Elgin.
Yeah. Yeah, they actually have a lot of oranges here.
Look, it says Peloponnese, Greece. We got to fix that. You're so peripatetic. We should just say peripatetic, comma, the world.
My heart is still in Greece.
You wish you were back in Greece?
No, not really. Well, actually, with the weather that we've been having here in Spain recently, yes. But no, actually, Valencia turns out to be an incredibly cool city.
I bet.
So I'm really enjoying
it. It's where the oranges come from.
Where the oranges, and I also was at Las Fallas last week. And that is something for the bucket list, I tell you.
What is it?
Are you familiar with this festival?
No.
It's nuts. What they do, and this whole tradition predates Christianity, something like 350 neighborhoods have a big contest to build these gigantic, elaborate, cartoonish, wooden and paper mache statues. They're really
I saw your pictures of the burning of the statues on Google+.
Yeah.
So that was Las Fallas.
That's right. They have a party that goes all night, every night, for five nights. And then on the end of the fifth night, they torch these things. This is in a big city, 20, 30 feet from major buildings, and they have a massive bonfire.
See, Burning Man didn't invent this.
No. It's just crazy. And the whole week, the kids are running around throwing dangerous firecrackers at tourists and stuff like that. It's really, really crazy. And, of course, everybody's hammered. So nobody cares, but it's really, really crazy, and everybody should do it at least once in their lifetime.
These ninots cost as much as $75,000 to make. I mean, they're not burning these
lightly. This reminds me a little bit of a Mardi Gras celebration.
It's kind of like that, except it's very unique in that the revelers there's no costumes per se, other than a lot of people wear traditional Spanish costumes, and then they do these parades. And I kid you not, there was a parade that I saw that was something like 8 hours of people in traditional Spanish costumes wandering by.
Oh, I want to go to this.
Again, burning. I mean, it's really crazy. And the main thing that people do is drink massive amounts of alcohol and eat enormous amounts of food.
All people do in the world.
Yeah.
It doesn't need Las Fallas for that. F-A-L-L-A-S. It's Valencian for the fires.
Well, what they do is they mandate that certain like food things, they may have churros and they have the special churro-like.
You know, Dvorak was determined to say that churros did not exist in Spain. that was some sort of American thing.
Every corner of every block during Las Fallas had a churro stand, and they're mandated to stay open 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
For the entire fest. So you'd be at the 6 o'clock in the morning coming home, and people are lining up for churros.
Oh, I would line up at any time. The Ninots remain in place until March 19th, the day known as La Crema, the burning. Starting in the early evening, young men with axes chop cleverly hidden holes in the statues and stuff them with fireworks. The crowds start to chant, the streetlights are turned off, and all of the Ninots are set on fire at exactly midnight. Over the years, the local bomberos, firemen, have devised unique ways to protect the town's buildings from being accidentally set on fire, such as covering the fronts with fireproof tarps. Each year, one of the Ninots is spared from destruction by popular vote. This is called the Ninot Indultat, the pardoned puppet.
Sounds like Thanksgiving.
And is exhibited in the local Museum of the Ninot, along with other favorites.
So this looks pretty big, right? But this is a children's one. Every one of these statues, there's a giant one for the adults and a little one for the children. This is one of the little ones. And it's about 15 feet high, something like that.
Wow.
The big one is like 2 stories high.
Is this why
high.
You find yourself in Valencia? Did you go specifically for that?
Yeah, we had intended to knock around in Spain for 3 months. We started with the Mobile World Congress, and then we're going to go around. And somebody told us that we really have to go to Las Fallas, and so we came here for a month. And Las Fallas was just incredible.
Good news. In June, in Alicante, the Hogueras de San Juan, the bonfires of St. John. Apparently, this is a popular thing in Spain to light
things
up.
Burn your way across Spain.
You can burn your way across Spain.
Nation of pyros.
Wow. I am so jealous. It sounds wonderful. This sounds like something to put on your bucket list, as you said.
Definitely.
Wow. Well, there's our little travel log.
The economy around, because if you're burning things down, that will sort of like spur the construction trades, raw materials, labor. Yeah.
Look how close to the buildings it is. I can't believe they don't have massive fires.
It's unbelievable. You would never see anything. And when we went to the very last one, the second, the runner up, they spare the best one. The second best one, they burn last at half an hour after all the others. And they burn this gigantic one completely in this claustrophobic position near all these buildings. And when it was done burning, flaming shrapnel came raining down on the entire city, including all the million or so people that were there.
Holy moly.
And I'm from Southern California where, a cigarette will set off the whole state.
Look at that.
And it was really crazy. Yeah, this is one of the regular burnings. And you'll note that I see the building behind it. That's not an illusion. That building is right there.
It's a less litigious society.
It is. That's what I love. A little danger never hurt anyone.
Because they burn all the lawyers.
Actually, that's not true. Mike, no wonder 2.2 million people follow you on Google+. What amazing images. What did you take that with?
Canon EOS 7D.
Oh, beautiful image. Fire's hard to shoot.
Yes, it is. Especially, and when I was taking those pictures, what happened was we were, probably 20 or 30 people back from the front row, and the heat got so bad that people started panicking and pushing back. And so there was like this semi-stampede situation of people freaking out from the heat. But but it was awesome. I had one of those monopods, the eye stabilizer monopod, and so I was sort of over the crowd, and that worked out pretty well. My iPhone.
So nice to see you didn't get consumed in flame. So this is a jam-packed news week. There is so much to talk about. I don't know where to begin. We could start with Adobe's CTO Kevin Lynch going to Apple, which happened right after the show last week, and then we'll work our way through the week. A lot of people said, whoa, why? This is the guy who did so much to promote Flash for so long. But we had Kevin Marks on This Week in Google last week, and Kevin said, no, this is the guy you want. He's the guy who promoted after Flash, started promoting SVG and the use of HTML5 standards. So this is a guy who actually is the right guy.
Yeah, and isn't it weird that people are like jumping all over him because, my God, while he was a senior executive employee of Adobe, he promoted the product that he was responsible for promoting. Like, oh my God, he is tainted with the sign of the beast for having done so.
John Gruber said he is a bozo and a bad hire based on 3 years ago writing that Flash was good, but
that's stupid. I mean, I read that this morning, and that I rather disagree with it.
Yeah,
I mean,
or at least
let's balance that with when Steve Jobs wrote his famous letter saying, "Here's why we don't support Flash." He made a number of points, most of which proved to be not technically true. Once the first generation of real like Flash-enabled tablets came by, it turned out that no, they don't run hot. No, the battery life is roughly what I was experiencing with the HTML5 video playback. It wasn't any less stable than it was before. There are a lot of reasons why Flash wasn't a great idea for mobile, but it's like let's at least balance it up by saying there was a lot of snake oil being sold on both sides of that argument.
Next day, swinging for the stars on Apple's hiring of Kevin Lynch. You think it's a good move?
I looked at Gruber. Gruber's point wasn't that he supported that Kevin Lynch supported Flash while at Adobe, but his point was that while CTO, Chief Technology Officer of Adobe, Kevin Lynch didn't seem to have either the foresight or the power to move Adobe into a more sensible mobile direction. He kind of
except that they did.
Well, they were like IE6 in that they were so far ahead of the market that they squandered the technology and they let everyone else catch up with them and they kind of left it.
That might be true.
And Manton Reese had a good point where he said it's hard to tell if Kevin Lynch is the wrong guy or he was just in the wrong job. And I tried to look at it from an Apple point of view because Apple has some famously successful external hires like Tim Cook, who came from Compaq, and Phil Schiller, who came from Macromedia, which is where Kevin Lynch got his start. They also had some really bad ones, like John Browett recently, who everyone saw him coming from Dixon and said, that's not the
low-end, budget, British retailer that he was running, Apple Retail, didn't last.
Didn't last at all.
Mark Papermaster, they hired him from IBM. IBM sued. They fought to keep him, and then
it was a
less
bad
than a year later,
fit.
It's like, see you, Mark.
So, yeah. But the idea is that they said that he was going to report to Bob Mansfield, which is odd because Kevin Lynch is a software guy. Bob Mansfield does the radios and the processors. He does core-level technology. And then there was another report, I think John Pachowski from All Things D said that he's going to interface between the software and the hardware teams to improve
that
communications.
That wouldn't be a bad thing to have.
But so Apple, we talked previously about Apple having a hard time finding engineers, but finding C-level talent at Apple, finding vice president talent that they're not promoting from within, but getting fresh eyes, fresh hands, fresh looks at technology, that's really hard. And if there's even a chance that Lynch can do that job, it's worthwhile for Apple to take a swing at it because that's how you find stars. You get people, you empower them, and you see what they can do.
Yeah. So this is an audacious move.
Yes.
Potentially flawed, but you don't know until you try it.
Yeah, absolutely. Who knows where the next Tim Cook or Phil Schiller is going to come from?
If you think about it, Phil Schiller worked for Macromedia.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. That was
not the most consumer
friendly.
That was
worse than Flash. So, yeah.
There's also an illusion among some of the bloggers and also among the public that these little battles that companies in the industry have are that they take them seriously and actually believe, you know, that this person's a bad person and I hate this person. And you know, that's really not the case at all. These guys, you know, it's a virtue to promote your own product. And to the extent that he was unable to make things happen at a different company that was in line with the philosophy of yet another company is really not anything against him. If you look at his whole career, he's been intimately involved with Apple and Apple products for a long, long time. And you know, these people in the industry don't take these rivalries personally at all. You're just looking for good people.
Only bloggers do.
And he took Creative Suite to the Creative Cloud, which might be really important for Apple at some point.
They got to find some better cloud people, that's for sure.
Yeah, and he was also working for General Magic for a while on UI, wasn't he?
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
All right. So well, that's where Andy Rubin came from,
of
course.
That's a nice pedigree. That was a nice device and lots of Mac connections and Apple.
Bill Atkinson worked there, right? Or was it Andy Hertzfeld? Andy Hertzfeld worked
there. Andy Hertzfeld.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. So he's no stranger to that crowd. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
We'll just wait and see, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's another one of those inside baseball things where, oh goodness gracious, who's the first person who's going to create like a TMZ.com type
for Apple
website that just says
that's a great idea.
Go for it.
I think we have several.
I'm not sure if I would pay any money for the first Phil Schiller upskirt shot. That's all I'm saying. If he wants to get out of a limo, I'm not looking.
But I think because Tim Cook is still a new CEO, people are looking at his hiring decisions, especially right. post-Browett, and it's a factor that people weigh with the stock, and it's a factor that they weigh in covering Tim Cook as full-on CEO of Apple.
All right, that's the first story. Maybe I should have started with the other story, but it's been fixed, so I guess it's less of a story, which was Apple has added two-factor authentication to your Apple ID. Turn it on. It's not very onerous, I have to say. I turned it on and I didn't find it a real problem. But briefly, and maybe not so briefly, we don't know, but The Verge discovered a very bad hole in Apple's I Forgot page that allowed people who just knew two things, your email address and your birth date, to steal your iCloud account.
It was our security writer, Nick Arnott. He saw the story, and without being able to find or know the steps, he managed to reproduce it his own in 15 minutes.
Because it was a URL, right?
Yeah,
you
it
had
was
to
a crafted
use
URL.
A crafted URL that I presume handed Apple the birth date and the and the email.
You
and
had
Apple
to sniff the packet to get the format of the URL.
But in other words, even the information The Verge gave out, which was not how to do it was sufficient for somebody who was sophisticated to figure it out.
And then Apple shut it, put it into maintenance mode, but he was able to craft a second URL that went past the maintenance mode.
Oh, my God.
And he alerted Apple. They fixed that. They took that part down. And then he went through and basically explained the attack. But it really was just a case of them not securing. Instead of filling out the two security questions, you could just take the URL that would be generated from a successful answer to that, change the ID, stick that in, send it back to them, and you were in. And it's one of those
things that's pathetic.
You know that it's trouble when I look at this breakdown of how the people got in, thought that's something that I would have thought of. That's bad.
Gee, I would have thought of that.
Yeah.
Now, if you are able to turn on second factor authentication, all that goes away. You don't even have security questions anymore, which is a good thing.
And it's probably a good idea to lie about your birthday. Like, make up a fictitious birthday and stick with it that you use for some of these services just to get around.
Just logging in to see if you, before the show, to see if BioShock had a Mac version. And of course, it asks you your birthday. You do that all any game site you visit, they ask you for your birthday. Now, you could just lie, but it's easier just to go, my birthday, 11/29/56, and then. Now they have it. Now everybody has it. Google has it. Facebook has it.
It's in Quebec, like elsewhere, they ask you your mother's maiden name as a security
question.
Another
bad one.
But in Quebec, you don't change your name when you marry. The government always calls you by your maiden name, so everybody knows everybody's mother's maiden name, and yet they still use it as a security question.
That's really
bad. And this is a similar thing because your birthday is almost everywhere now, and it's still asked as a security question.
Yeah, it's really horrible when you realize exactly how much data is being harvested that they don't need for the purpose that they're asking you for. Like when they ask for a zip code, it really is to make sure they fix your location. When they're asking for a birthday, yes, possibly it's because they're trying to satisfy age-restricted requirements so that they vary from state to state to state on access to content. But they also want that information about what your demographic is about. Yeah. I was just configuring a new piece of equipment 2 days ago, and big and like page 3 of like a page 7, like as you walk through of setting up the services, oh, we need your credit card information. Said, well, no, I'm going to leave those fields blank. I push the big orange button that says next. I'm sorry, all those fields are required. And as I'm about to like get my self-righteous, no, you have no need. You don't need my credit card information for what I'm about to ask you to do. Then after I'm about to get my temper down about 10 notches, realize, okay, this is tiny, tiny little piece of HTML text in light gray on the white background that says no thanks that I can click to actually get rid of it. Just hoping that people are not going to think about providing that kind of information, including your address, including your phone number, when you actually don't have to do so. So that's why, phishing comes in all forms and sizes now. And sometimes it's not just the Russian mob that's trying to get your bank information. It's these regular commercial websites that's trying to add more data than they actually need for you.
It's important to point out, they're asking the chat room, two-factor authentication from Apple is only available in four countries, I think, right now, the U.S., the U.K. It's not available in Canada, so it isn't.
So what do you do?
You change your birth date. And so that's, it sounds like a silly answer, but that's
presuming
the answer
right that there's something like this still out there. I mean, they fixed this one. Although it's interesting because Nick Arnott at iMore came up with actually a different way than the original. So he reverse engineered something that was another way of doing
absolutely.
It.
It was an insecure procedure, and there was multiple ways to attack the insecurity of that procedure.
Wow. They call it a cross-site forging vulnerability.
Yeah.
Or CSRF. Wow.
It's disappointing to start here.
I had an interesting experience with that two-factor authentication for Google services. The last day of Las Fias, when they were burning everything, which we were warned is pickpocket paradise, somebody lifted my iPhone.
Oh.
I handed it to my wife. She dropped it in her purse. And then by the time the entire city had been burned to the ground, it was gone. And so... I had this is a few days, a couple days, 2 or 3 days before Apple announced the two-factor authentication. But I had Google's going, but I had it set up.
It was on the phone,
my iPhone.
Yeah.
Yes. So, so there's a process when you set up two-factor authentication with Google, where you have these like secret codes, and you're supposed to print it out and put it in your, you know, some, you know, this is a whole thing. But it's not fool. That's not foolproof either, because I just had it end up turning it off, changing all my passwords, and then coming back later and setting it up with a different way for them to reach me to confirm the secret codes. But there's just, there's no substitute for, you know, changing your birth date, making sure you chain your phone to your physical body. You know, there, two-factor authentication isn't the ultimate solution either, unfortunately.
And as
I do like the way that Apple set it up, though. As soon as I heard two-factor authentication, I thought, dang, does it mean that every time that I want to make a purchase, I have to make sure that I have my iOS device with me, even if I'm not making that purchase on this for this device specifically? They only ask for it at times when you're about to crack open your security in a major way, like approve a new device or approve a new payment method or make changes to your personal information. So,
yeah, it doesn't bother you a lot. In fact, I thought it would see it on the iTunes store on my iPad, and I never did.
And the nice thing about it, too, is it'll send an SMS.
I'm not sure that's good.
Or it'll send a Find My iPhone request, which means that if you don't have an iOS device but you have another phone, you can still get the SMS version of it.
Right.
So it is limited cross-platform support.
And I guess we should point out that, Mike, even if they have your Google Authenticator on your phone, they still need your password. And I guess if you have that on the phone in some form, you could be in trouble.
There's another funny part of the story. It's funny now. It was horrible at the time. But what happened was this all happened at like 3 o'clock in the morning. And we've been drinking gallons of sangria. And just, I mean, it was just, watching incredibly loud fireworks at the same time these huge bonfires are going off. So sensory overload. I was like in this really weird state of mind. So I have the type of iPhone case that has a wallet inside. So all my credit cards were gone too. And so
they probably just threw away the phone and took the credit cards.
Well, no, I don't know what they did with the credit cards, but I think they just wanted the phone because several things. We went to a Starbucks, which was the only thing open with Wi-Fi that we could find. Then I used another iPhone, an older iPhone that I have, through the Wi-Fi to call the credit card companies to cancel my credit cards. And while I was doing that, talking to the guy, I was simultaneously using Find My iPhone, and I wanted to wipe the iPhone. And so I saw Mike's iPhone. I wiped it, and the phone that I wiped was the one I was using to call. And I looked at it, and suddenly it was being wiped. And then I looked at my list, and every phone that I've ever had is still listed as a wipeable device on Find My iPhone. I just saw the first one and wiped it, which was really dumb, but there was three or four of them. And there was no differentiation between them. So anyway, you really have to prepare for this stuff because stuff does happen, and you have to have a really clear plan, which I did not do. So, you know, I'm sort of learning this the hard way.
Wow, what a bummer! Yeah. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it was totally worth it. I would sacrifice an iPhone every year to go to Las Fias.
Mike, can I say that you were drunk and near huge fires? Losing your phone was not the worst thing that happened.
That's right. My breath could have caught on fire.
Now, are you like going to Pamplona to run the bulls next? Is that your next feat of, amazing macho machismo?
I doubt it. Having a cheeseburger chasing me is not my idea of a good time. But we don't know where we're going to go. Probably going to go to Northern Africa, take a couple of trips.
How
but
fun.
Yeah, but we'll be back in the U.S. in time for Google I.O. So.
So also, Apple pushed out 6.1.3 because if you had, as I do on your iPhone, you know, the password lock, easy to bypass that.
And this one has been bypassed now, too.
The new one is bypassed again?
Yeah.
Because the last time you were here, they'd fixed it and bypassed it, and now it's bypassed again.
Yeah, I believe so.
So, in other words, that fix
is... The Samsung has had theirs bypassed.
That's right.
It's non-trivial to provide access to emergency calling and photography and lock down the whole thing.
Ah, that's the problem, isn't it? Yeah.
And you can only get access to it with for camera and contacts because that's the stuff that they have to leave open for.
Right. So that's not so bad. It's not
suboptimal, but it's...
It's not perfect. Apple made an acquisition of a company called Wi-Fi Slam. And apparently it's an indoor location company, although we now know what the Slam means.
Simultaneous location and mapping.
There you go. I thought it was like a shot to the head. So Wi-Fi Slam.
Leo, could you give Renee a dollar right now for having remembered that?
He knew it right off the top of his head.
An American dollar.
I've been reading it all week, and I still don't remember it.
I would not have gotten all four.
So the problem is that GPS, of course, doesn't work indoors. Google, among, I would presume, others, but Google for sure has convention hall mapping, airport mapping, a lot of shopping mall mapping. That I presume they're using the Google Street View to do. And then I would guess triangulation of Wi-Fi access points, right?
Yep.
Is this the same idea?
This, as far as I understand it, it does use different Wi-Fi and different signal points, and it tries to figure out what the resistance would be. I mean, Matthew Panzerino did a really good article at the Next Web that Leo's looking at right now. And it tries to adjust for the material composition, but it's not... Apple bought C3 Technologies a little while ago. They were the company that did the helicopter and airplane flying to map buildings. And with this company, you press a button, it shows your location on the phone, then you walk through hallways, and it uses your location to map the passage through the building. So it's not sort of a magic solution. It sounds to me more like something Apple would use to generate maps than a company that's already going to provide us with maps.
One of the issues is, and you see this all the time in apartment buildings, you can't tell what floor you're on.
Yeah, because
So if you're in a mall with four floors, you don't know where you are.
Civilian GPS is not allowed to be exact enough to tell you the difference in stories, much less local distance. Yeah.
But this system is doing so many clever things, like trying to figure not just GPS, not just Wi-Fi, but here is the accelerometer, here's the gyroscope, here's a point at which this person seems to be moving faster rather than slower.
They're doing reckoning. That's called dead reckoning. They're doing that.
Well, not just that, but it's things like if someone is moving faster rather than slower, that is an indication that they're walking in a straight line, no matter what all the other sensors are telling them.
Now, I got to point out that they're not just recording this for you, but in order for this to work, they have to record everybody who's in this building, their location as they guess it. So what it's saying to me is that if I'm carrying around an iPhone, that it's constantly sending not just location information, but accelerometer information. Angle information and other stuff
It really depends on how Apple chooses to implement this technology. Remember, this is all guesswork at this point. We know the technology is. We don't know how to what extent Apple's going to use it. But let's say we go for the alternate reality in which Apple is a bunch of greedy, non-privacy respecting bastards. They could a company that is more like Google, more like Facebook than Apple, let's put it that way, could, if they had their phone, they could put this technology in and make sure that anytime there is somebody running their operating system in this building, it is collecting this information, and essentially every ant that leaves a trail is giving more information about what those trails are. And that one person running this software is not going to give Facebook useful information, but 100 people using this software without their knowledge every single day would give a very, very interesting profile of here is where all the paths are. And then you hand that information off to a central server that can sort of transpose that into, okay, this is a hallway, this is a place where people move and then stop, so this must be a congregation area. So it could be one of those places where crowdsourcing could produce a very, very consistent map of something like on the plus side, something like an amusement park, something like a shopping center or a mall. On the negative side, something like a business of 40 to 50 people or a school or something like that. So it would be a good thing if this is a simple way for people who want their public spaces to be mapped to create these very, very accurate maps. Like, assume that you have employees of a mall, and that basically you give your security guards like each a phone, and over the course of walking through the mall every day for months, they produce accidentally a beautiful map with their knowledge. That could be a very good thing. If it turns out that without your knowledge, you're entering a building that the building that you go to work in every single day has been mapped down to a six inch resolution, and now anybody can not only find out how to get from one point to another inside your building, but even a point where they can figure out that, hey, okay, the accelerometer data from Andy's phone indicates he's probably on the third floor and probably in the northwest quadrant of the building. He is typically in this office, so I bet he is in this office today on Tuesday.
But that's really what they're going to have to do to be not Facebook, which is completely be able to prove that they can decouple the data from the individual.
And they can't, and I'll show you why they can't in a moment. You know what? They may have just
really the test.
Yeah, they may have hired these people because this is just brilliant freaking stuff. I mean, they're looking at things like if you've got they measure footfalls, right? Because they can tell from the accelerometer, okay, that was a step. But then they take all this data and they mash it together and they look for patterns, and they're able from that in very, I think, this very high end computer science.
I saw 2 years ago, I came across a paper from a graduate paper that tried to figure out where a coffee machine was inside a building based on what times do people stop at a certain location and how much time do they spend there. And that's just an example of, if you have a large enough data set and a clever enough mind looking at that data set, you can pop out all kinds of really interesting information. And so whether this is an invasion of personal privacy or not, just like sometimes you really have to respect how good a hack is and how clever it is, this is some really smart technology that
I wonder how much more of an invasion of privacy this is than what is pretty standard, which is that your phone is going around mapping where the Wi-Fi locations are. And the reason that's something of a privacy issue is that the Wi-Fi nodes in question could be in your house, inside people's house, without their permission. So it's not only the user's no permission, but it's the Wi-Fi owner's.
But remember, Mike, it's not just setting the location. It's not just setting the Wi-Fi information. It's sending every bit of data coming off of that phone, the accelerometer.
They do that for traffic on highways now.
Let me point you to this article in Nature that just came out from some university researchers who basically said, after studying 15 months of human mobility data for 1.5 million people, that all they take really is 4 points, and they can identify 95% of us who we are based on those 4 points of data. So this massive amount of data is sufficient for people. Now, you have to make the decision about whether it's worth it to you. It's worth it to me. I couldn't care less if somebody knows where I am, but if you're in the witness protection program, maybe you should care.
And does Apple care?
Apple cares. I mean, they're collecting the data. It doesn't even matter if Apple cares. If that database is lost,
that's true.
That stuff has huge value.
Remember that this is the same company that was crowdsourcing traffic information and leaving it as an open file that pretty much anybody could access. I'm sorry, Mike, you've been trying to talk.
The problem with using this technology on a permission basis is nobody will grant that permission. There's no way to ask permission that doesn't sound horrible. Oh, we're going to track everything on your phone. You know, this is a memo from corporate headquarters. We want to map the inside of the building. And so we'd like to map every step you take, every place, the angle of your phone, everywhere, every time you're in the men's room. We're going to know where your phone is in there. Don't worry. You know, your data will be protected. Nobody's going to agree to that. So in order to use it, you'd have to.
I'm kind of thinking about, remember that Kickstarter project of the stainless steel really cool iPhone case that they shipped? They didn't figure out that when you put a stainless steel band around the iPhone, you sort of hide the antenna from everybody. Yeah. I think that's going to be now a very, very popular item, known as the privacy band, the chastity belt for your iPhone. I would pay $80 to make sure that nobody can get access to any of the data inside my phone and any wireless network.
And let's point out that Apple recently updated its privacy policy to say it was going to share spatio-temporal location of their users with partners and licensees. Yeah. I don't know what spatio-temporal location means, but I think it means anything they want.
I don't want to keep people up, but this stuff goes on all the time. Like whenever you go to a store and you buy a can of Coke or you buy potato chips,
right,
they collect that information, and it takes very little effort to build a profile of you as a shopper and very few unique identifiers. And they do it to try to figure out what kind of coupons are the best value for them to give. But they're still creating these profiles of us all the time in almost every industry now.
So and that's what's interesting about big data is
– The difference, though, is that if I really worry about that, I can simply not use the Price Club card when I make my purchase. It's not like when I walk into a store as part of the license, as part of the deal that I'm making with the store of selling me this bottle of Diet Coke for $1.79, that I have to tell them who I am and what time of day I've made this purchase. And
they don't need the card anymore, though. They have such a big volume set, and they're doing it's called customer insight analytics and market basket analysis. They can usually figure out who you are based on buying patterns, and you know sometimes it's tied to phone numbers, sometimes it's tied to other metrics, but we don't need the club card anymore.
I know of those systems, and there are ways to opt out of it.
It's not as though
me walking to a random gas station, they're going to identify me if I pay cash.
There have been some interesting studies quoted in this article. In one study, a medical database was successfully combined with a voter's list to extract the health record of the governor of Massachusetts. So, you know, I mean, you could think of a lot of nefarious uses mm-hmm. for this. Let's say the Westboro Baptist Church actually got some intelligent people there, and they decided that they wanted to watch 1 million people, and if anybody went near an abortion clinic, wipe their iPhone or do something. This, all of this stuff is possible, given this the availability of this
domestic
data.
Domestic surveillance.
And so the point really is the data is being collected. It's pretty clear now. Apple's got a very big horse in this mm-hmm. race. Google certainly has for a long time. Databases are combined from a variety of sources, can give you a very accurate profile of yourself. It's very difficult to opt out.
Yeah.
I guess you could, but it's very difficult. You can move to Valencia. It's very difficult to opt out.
And companies like Skyhook are doing it on small, like small companies also are doing it.
And there's benefit. There's certainly benefit to us for this. So those are the data points. I don't know what you make of that.
I think the biggest problem is that the human mind is not capable of projecting or predicting what big data and machine learning are capable of extracting.
This is a surprise.
So counterintuitive.
Four location points is enough to identify a person, an individual, in 95% of the cases. Yeah. That's how unique where we go is.
Yeah, exactly. And most people just aren't aware of this. Holidays are kind of dangerous for me because I sometimes keep talking and I'm not taking the temperature of what I'm saying is having a reaction on people in the room. And so someone was at a table with like 12 or 13 people, and someone was talking about, I don't really care if this company knows about this. And as it happened, I was doing like a lot of research on that particular topic. And I said, well, here is the amount of information that I can get off of you if I just know two of these random things you're not interested in protecting. And I'm just talking, and I see this person's face get a little wider and a little wider and a little wider because they just don't understand that this is an action. We're used to the idea that when you enter a casino, that environment is designed to make sure you stay there and keep losing money for as long mm-hmm. as possible. If they can do that by depriving you of your sense of time, depriving you of your higher logic functions, they will play every trick to do that. And what people need to understand is that data mining is such a lucrative business that it turns the world into a casino like that, where anytime they can get one piece of information out of you, and anytime they can, by buying off some grad student's thesis project and integrating this into another data set to figure out, to hook up one innocent little database with another innocent little database, they're definitely going to do it. And the concern is that the opt-out button is being grayed out in more and more of our situations. And even a company like Apple, I don't think, is necessarily immune from this. I'm sorry, I'll spin this down because once again, I'm shooting my mouth off a little bit. But I mean, I don't trust Facebook at all because their corporate policy is the world is there to be shared with everything. So it's our job is to collect as much information as possible and share it with as many people as possible. Google is more trustworthy only because they want to increase profits for Google and not the entire world, but they are still designed to target ads towards me personally. That gives them a great incentive to identify me and my habits personally. I trust Apple most of all, but not because I don't believe that they are never going to try to pull information about my life, but because they are going to make sure that is only applied towards Apple products. So I don't think that there is a halo around Apple's data collection policies. I just simply believe that the amount of damage that they can do with the information they're collecting from me as an iPad user, as an iPhone user, as a Mac user, is not as great as it would be on other devices.
The other problem, though, is that you mentioned, do I trust Google? Do I trust Apple? So, you know, this is where Siri and Google Now are going. They're going in a direction of collecting maximum amounts of information, all this stuff that we're talking about times 100. But then there are all these startups, and they're coming out with really, like Grokker and Easily Do. Google's Field Trip is awesome. MindMeld, I don't know if you're familiar with MindMeld. There's another one called Sherpa. These startup, these little tiny companies are giving you these incredible benefits in exchange for tracking every single thing that you do and every single place that you go. And everybody's going to love these apps. And there's going to be a lot of them. So this data is going to be flying in every direction, and somebody's going to be selling it. It's really going to be an issue that somebody's going to have to deal with.
Or just give up.
I can allay fears.
You have zero privacy.
Well, it's certainly for sure that if you carry a cell phone, you've opted in.
Yeah.
Period.
Yep.
So stop carrying a cell phone. Credit cards, you got to throw those away. Got to use cash only. Anything that ain't going to last too long. Huh?
Anything with RFID on it.
Yeah.
Passports.
I mean, you could do it, but you're going to be mightily inconvenienced. And so I just gave up.
If I can assuage people's fears, though, before I worked at iMore, I spent 10 years in high-end analytic databases, like Bitvector databases, columnar decomposition, the whole
just
bit.
Move over a little bit here.
And though, but the thing is that it was incredibly hard to sell because people just wanted to buy Oracle. And it's going to take it's going to take a generation of people to really get this technology, understand it, because HP bought Vertica, did nothing with it.
Right.
There's all sorts of really amazing technologies that are squandered because these companies don't really understand them yet. And that's
or maybe sensitive to this kind of backlash from consumers who say, you're collecting what about who? You know what? I don't think that's good.
But it's a hugely lucrative business. There are companies that all they do is collect data and based on merchants and sell that data back to merchants and their competitors. And that's going to be the next sort of Google AdSense massive ad marketing buys.
We're going to have to live with it, I think. But certainly if you want to use technology, you're going to have to live with it. And Wi-Fi Slam is – these guys are really smart.
Yeah.
I mean, just based on what I've read about them. Yeah. They made a sample program for, oddly enough, for Android, never released on the iPhone. That's been pulled off the Android store. But it showed what they could do with the data they have. And I think this is a little scary and brilliant.
You can see why Apple wants them.
Yeah. In fact, they may not do any of this stuff. They may just want these guys.
Yeah.
As God said in the movie, there is no up without a down. There is no inside without an outside. There is no bad without a good. So
they may just need it for their circular campus. How do you find anything when everything's in a circle?
I don't know. It's based on NASCAR. Just keep making left turns. You'll get there eventually.
And this is like the fourth mapping company they bought in recent years. They bought PlaySpace and Poly9 and C3 Technologies. And so
they needed to.
Yeah.
We know that. And what it shows is they're all in on this stuff. They're not going to sit back.
Major area of interest.
They really want this to work.
More than a hobby.
More than a hobby.
They came late, but they came when they smelled the money.
They brought the bank.
Well, you know, there is an opportunity. Okay, I'll say there is an opportunity for Apple here. And you kind of framed that conversation right at the beginning, Andy, when you said, if you trust Apple. What if a company could really earn your trust in terms of data privacy, but still offer you the benefits of it, but say, and Apple really, I think, is trying to position themselves this way. Look, we're collecting this data, but we're not sharing. This is an opportunity for somebody to say, we're going to be the privacy company, but we're still going to give you the benefits of all this data. Isn't that a great opportunity?
A differentiator.
It's always a transaction. I mean, for everything that you can say negatively about Google, and there's a lot you can say about how they collect data, they are giving you wonderful free products that would probably cost the average consumer at least $1,200 a year if they had to pay for all this sort of stuff. And there are a bunch of articles out there about, well, let's say you want to cut your access to Google and you want to really invest in privacy rather than in the full portfolio of features. You can get mail systems that work on your own personal servers that cost money. You can run something similar to Google Reader and have that on your own on a server that you control. There are pay services that promise that whatever data that you generate and whatever social map you create on the social network belongs to you and can be accessed by nobody else. But unfortunately, The two costs are, one, money, because these people need to be, if they're not going to be making money off of selling your data, they need to keep the lights on and maybe keep, you know, put some food into the bellies of their children. But also, it's going to cost in terms of ease of use. Most there is a threshold that you could call like the I don't care anymore threshold, where I would love to have a fresh barbecued roast chicken until I find out how complicated it is to like produce like a real, like, you know, commercial grade roast, at which point I thought maybe I will go to Chipotle and give that nice man $6.35 and he will hand me a burrito instead of my spending 4 hours in the kitchen. A lot of people care about privacy, but it quickly crosses their I don't care about this anymore threshold when you tell them, here's how much you have to learn about how networks work and how encryption works in order to really have security and privacy on the internet.
There are also kids growing up and becoming teenagers in a world where privacy feels like it's completely gone already, and they accept it very quickly. And so, you know, those of us who remember an era where we couldn't be tracked 24/7 are more sensitive to privacy issues than somebody who's 15 or 20 right now, who, you know, it just seems like a pointless concern.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but wait till there's a, you know, picture of them telling jokes about dongles posted on the Twitter and they lose their jobs, they might be a little more concerned about it all of a sudden.
But who are you going to hire? Because you're going to have that kind of data on everybody.
So, well, we have to, yeah, know, we're in the, it's like for a while, if you'd smoked pot, that was a strike against you to be president of the United States. Not anymore. Not so much anymore.
Right. Yeah.
It'd be pretty hard to find somebody who hadn't at least inhaled.
Yeah. And even cocaine might be okay now. So it's like, it's a great time to run for president for all of us.
Yeah. At the same time, we old timers will try to explain to, you know, people who are like 14 to 23 that you should care about this stuff. It's amazing to us that you don't think that's dangerous. But at the same time, you know, those of us who grew up during the Cold War, like, you woke up every morning knowing that at any point nuclear bombs could rain down and destroy all of civilization. And I can't believe you're being so blasé about it. Well, I mean, we just...
What are you going to do?
It was going to happen.
Cover.
Exactly.
What are you going to do?
It's part of life. Our president is an idiot. Well,
what are you going to do?
I'm not really up for armed insurrection. I'd much rather deal with the risk of being bombed to death.
Yeah, most of us... Exactly. Most of us just kind of go along.
Andy
go along to get along. We're going to take a break, come back with more. Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times, Rene Ritchie from iMore.com, Mike Elgin from Valencia, Spain, and Google Plus, where he is still the last man standing. I like to tease him on that.
I'm not really standing.
You know, they just released a new iOS update on Google Plus. It's, again, better and better and better. It's becoming like the iOS app that no one uses.
Yeah. No, it's a beautiful thing. And, you know, there's a funny thing about Google Plus. There's a very hardcore group of people in the U.S. who love it.
Right.
This is a radically international service. That
oh, that's interesting.
The rest of the world is definitely on it. And so it's a different, it's kind of outside of the normal tech bubble where a lot of people in tech journalism are not into it, but they're a minority. Globally, it's huge.
Huge. Plus.
That's very interesting. Yeah. Orkut never took off in the U.S. Predated Facebook. But it was huge in Brazil, not so much anymore. Facebook is now one of them.
It was huge in Brazil, and secondarily, it was huge in India. But the numbers, even for India and Brazil, are getting ginormous on Google Plus. And there's another thing that happens.
Why is that, Mike? Do you think they're more, they trust Google more than Facebook?
Well, actually, I read something recently that was very interesting, which is that Facebook and Google both have these subsidized cell phone services in a lot of the third world, where they will basically reduce the cost of the data plan, but you get this kind of AOL of just Facebook or just Google services.
Ew.
And so a lot of people around the world, their only computer is a smartphone, it's their first smartphone. They're often upgrading from a feature phone. And to get the subsidized rate, they're getting just Google services, for example. That's one small reason. I don't know what the impact of that is. Probably pretty insignificant. But I do think that there's a lot of affinity, that there's a lot less affinity for every latest startup, every latest thing, which we have in Silicon Valley, and more affinity for, like, oh, I know Google. Oh, I've been using Google Search for a long time. I've been using Gmail for a long time. That's a brand that I trust. So there's a different mentality and a less of a likelihood to jump on the latest thing. Plus, they get on it, and it's really, really nice. And they can, you know, they're finding a lot. Like, you know, I get on, and I have, if I mention something about Saudi Arabia, for example, which I often do, I just get flooded with all these people come out of the woodwork from Saudi Arabia, English-speaking Saudis. And we have these wonderful debates. And then I'll mention another country, and all those people come out of the woodwork. It's very, very international. And it doesn't hurt that there's a really great Chrome plugin that just instantly translates all the comments into whatever your language is. And so people who don't even speak the same language are having these really rich conversations. So it's an interesting phenomenon.
We certainly have had good results with the communities for all of our shows. Good engagement and stuff, but we're not there to get everybody who watches or listens to shows involved. We're just, if we can get a few thousand people who are engaged and participating, that's a great platform.
Going to where the viewers are.
Right. Yeah. Thank you for being here. We appreciate it. What time is it in Valencia?
Oh, it's not bad. It's 8:30.
Oh, it's early yet. Plenty of time before they set the town on fire.
That's right. I got time to run.
Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom's not a law firm. They provide self-help legal services at your direction, which means you can use them to do personal and business legal documents you can trust. And if you need advice from an attorney, they even can help you with that, with the pre-negotiated prices in their legal plan. In most states, you can see reviews of the attorney's profile, so you know what you're getting. I'll give you an example. You know, when we started Twit, I wanted to make it an LLC. I don't know why. I just got it in my mind. I shouldn't start a business without some protection. And an LLC for a startup seemed like the simplest thing. $99, a few questions, and boom. And we're still using those LLC papers, even though we now have a law firm and lots of lawyers. And the cost, I could tell you, is a lot more than LegalZoom. But that LLC stands, and it's great. Trademarks, copyrights, patents, NDAs, regular corporations, too. You could do it all at LegalZoom.com for a lot less. And frankly, you know it's everything that you need to know. If you don't, for instance, there was one question I've mentioned this before I came up with was, what state should I incorporate in? Some said Delaware, some said California. So I would have loved to have asked an attorney, well, what do you think? And now with LegalZoom, you can. They've got that legal plan attorney, an extensive network that available in most states that can give you advice, one question, two, at a very affordable price. 12 years LegalZoom's been around. 2 million Americans have used them, not just for business, too. Wills, just $69. If you don't have a will, you better make one, especially if you've got kids. You don't want the government or courts to decide what happens to your kids. You want to say before that day. You could establish a living trust at LegalZoom.com. If you are a blogger, maybe you want to trademark your blog title. Think about that. iMore's trademarked, I'm sure.
We've applied for sure. I don't know how long it takes.
A little while to get it, but that's, you know, you don't want to mess around with that kind
Absolutely.
Of stuff. You don't want somebody coming along and saying, yeah, I'm iMore. No, I'm iMore.
And especially with all the different scraper sites, it's bad.
Yeah. Simple thing to do, and it's not expensive. NDAs, maybe you've invented something and you want to share it with a company. Maybe they want to make it, but you might want to have an NDA to protect you. It's all there. LegalZoom.com. Again, not a law firm, but self-help services at your specific direction. But you can speak to a legal plan attorney to get your questions answered and get ongoing advice. For a special thank you for using LegalZoom, use our offer code MBW, and we'll give you $10 off your purchase at LegalZoom.com. Just a little, you know, just to encourage you to use MBW as the offer code so they know you saw it here. LegalZoom.com.
T-Mobile iPhone, Leo.
Yeah, T-Mobile has announced, they announced it this morning, they're going to have the iPhone come April.
Yep.
For how much? $99, right?
It is an incredibly complicated formula.
Oh, so it's not just, here's $99, give me my iPhone 5? Because they're getting rid of the contracts.
Yeah, but you put down $99 and then you pay $20 a month for 2 years.
Oh.
And it ends up being, the total price ends up being lower than the amount you paid to just get an unlocked phone. So it's a really good deal. And then Your data and phone plan is separate from that, but not on a contract. It actually seems like a really cool deal to me.
They're going to have the HTC One, too, which is something I've been very interested in.
Same price.
That's tempting. And they're eliminating early termination fees. They're eliminating contracts or no?
It's So here's the big problem in the U.S. market is that people are used to subsidized phones. They're used to going into an AT&T or a Verizon and getting the $0, $100, $200 right. phone. And lots of people have tried to go to the contract-free phone where you just pay outright and then pay your service. And it seems really expensive.
That's how Ting does it. But yeah, then it's a $600 phone.
So they're mitigating. T-Mobile's not – you can walk in there and buy an unlocked phone and just – pay your money for it and go about your business. But they don't want to lose a customer who comes in and says, why is it so expensive? So they also have ways where you can pay part of the phone and then prepay more of it. It's an interesting middle ground. It is more complicated than going to a pure contract-free model, but I think it's smart given the U.S. market. And there are you do have to pay fees if you try to terminate earlier and whatnot. So it is more complicated than it has to be, but I think that's the realities of their market.
But it's certainly fairer. I mean, the AT&Ts of the world, the standard contract thing, the whole business model is designed to bury and hide the details of what you're paying for and when,
right?
So that they get more money. That, for example, if you get a phone every single time after 2 years, and you get a you can get the new phone subsidized right on schedule, then you can argue that you might be paying for that phone what it costs. But if you delay 3, 4, 5 months, you're still paying for the phone even after you paid for it.
Right.
Until you get another phone. It's such a ripoff, and they just are harvesting cash from all these users because there's so much confusion built into a regular subsidized phone.
That's how a mortgage model works. Like, you end up paying more for your house on a mortgage than if you bought it up front.
It's called interest.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
But it's marked at interest, and you know what the annual percentage rate is. You know what you're paying.
Yeah.
You know what portion is principal, what portion is interest. The phone. This is. I think you're right, Mike. I think clarity is really what we want. Just tell me. You know,
well, that's the devastating thing for the conventional carriers, because they don't want anybody setting a precedent for clarity about what you're paying for. That's a disaster for them.
Yeah. They're doing this kind of economic, predictably irrational stuff where they go. Yeah, but it's only – and that's why I always do this. We review these phones. So it's a cheap phone. It's $50. It's $0. That's irrelevant. The price up front is the smallest part of what you're going to pay over 2 years
for
that phone.
Total cost of ownership.
It's the total cost of ownership that matters. And a $50 at the beginning less is not really saving you much money.
And the second part of this was their LTE announcement. I think it's
– seven cities. Yeah. Not – this is really the thing that holds people back from T-Mobile. It's HSPA Plus, although because nobody uses T-Mobile, I use it. It's not bad. It's pretty fast.
And they've got originally they were AWS spectrum, so not the same spectrum as AT&T, and not all phones supported it. But they've been rolling out more 3G HSPA on regular frequencies, and
it's not bad.
I don't know if you saw it or not, but I don't know if they said whether the iPhone on T-Mobile will work on AWS or not.
Oh, that's a good question.
I missed it.
I don't know. Baltimore, Houston, Kansas City, Las Vegas, Phoenix, San Jose, and Washington, D.C. will be the first LTE cities. Now, they're acquiring Metro PCS, so that will add to more LTE on the AWS frequencies. What were you pointing at?
Yeah, whether it says it's AWS for their regular iPhone, but it looks like it might be, because that's their big thing.
It has to be.
There's more. They have a lot more faster internet on HSP on AWS than they have on standard frequencies.
So it's a frequency issue.
Yeah,
that's not a radio issue. It's just you have to have that frequency.
People say that Apple could enable it, but Apple could do a lot of things.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see what the T-Mobile version of the iPhone can do.
Does Apple do? They do different SKUs for different carriers, right?
They have three SKUs right now. They have one. There's this line of thinking that Verizon demands their own SKU. No matter what you do, if you make a world phone, you'll have to make
a new version of the A1428 has been tweaked on the hardware side by Apple to support advanced wireless services on T-Mobile's network.
Yeah, so they have three SKUs now, and it sounds like that'll stay the same way.
That's good news.
Yeah.
Will an iPhone 5 be actually better on T-Mobile with AWS?
I guess it depends on the area you live in, which is usually the big defining factor for a carrier.
It might be here.
Here's the other bit of good news that if I'm reading the news correctly, I believe that if you have a family plan, it's a good price. You have five people on the plan. It's like $210 for everything, but it's genuinely unlimited data. They don't throttle you or any of that stuff. If you have an individual plan, then there's a throttling process where after a certain number of whatever data, they cut you off until the month kicks over to the new month or whatever. But for a family plan, I believe it's actually unlimited data, which is rare these days. Normally you have to be grandfathered in or whatever, and that's keeping a lot of people on AT&T, for example. So that's good news.
Yeah, so at the event, John Legere said AWS for the iPhone 5.
I think there's something where you get limited data plus is unlimited 2G, but you get a limited amount of 3G, and then the more expensive plan, you have a much higher or close, quote-unquote, unlimited 3G.
Have they announced pricing?
I believe it was in the same announcement,
okay,
same event.
Yeah, the new carrier rate plans. Actually, they already went live. Contract-free pricing, $70 a month for unlimited data, talk, and text. That's a lot less than I'm paying.
Yeah. And they have to. They're the fourth place carrier. They're going to have to do something different to get attention and get customers.
Yeah. Yep.
Up to 12 gigabytes of hotspot data as well through tiers of up to $110 a month. So, interesting. I love seeing this. This is why you want competition.
Yes.
This is why you didn't want them to be purchased by somebody. And I think this is great. Well, what about the new iPhone? June? Now June. This is Gene Munster, the highly respected analyst. Gene Munster says June.
I heard August a couple weeks ago, and I've heard
nothing.
And
you, I trust.
I've heard nothing to say that it's coming. And August is a soft window because the longer you are away, the further small things can change the window. But it sounded like August previously, and everything I've heard since then sounds like late July, early August.
How could Gene get this so wrong?
Same reason he gets the Apple TV wrong every year. A lot of it is facts to support a thesis
wishful.
And not
it's
the other way around.
It's wishful thinking. Yeah.
The amount of contradictory stuff I've heard about at least three different major Apple products over the past 2 months basically gets me go. Okay, let's just say I don't know. It's going to happen sometime this year. I'm not going to say when.
There's very few financial analysts who consistently provide accurate information because we're not their customers.
Right.
They're not writing these things for us.
Right. They're writing them for it's really a sales pitch in some ways.
Or market manipulation if you're less charitable.
Yeah, and also needs to be said that Apple makes the launch deliberately unpredictable. The last thing they want is for their competitors to know exactly well in advance when they're going to ship the next iPhone, because that changes the whole competitive dynamics. Right. They want it to be unpredictable.
Well, but I'm asking this as a sincere question. Is there evidence that they are shifting that window to make it more, to deny their competitors an advantage and be able to predict a launch window?
I don't know. I probably not. It just is a rational thing for the leader in an industry like this to do. I mean, they would be kind of foolish not to. And they do move it around a bit, but it just makes rational sense that they don't want everybody to know exactly when they're going to ship. And also, I think another little bit of soft evidence is the distance between when they announce their announcement date and when the announcement date actually is. They don't say, oh, in 4 months we're going to have a big announcement. No, they're saying in 3 weeks or whatever it is. I don't know what the amount of time is, but it's a pretty small window. And it just makes sense that they want to be somewhere between summer and the holidays, and there's a calculation there, but they don't want their competitors. I'm sure that they don't want their competitors to know exactly when that's going to be.
Well, there's like 3-month window where they've typically launched, and that's why I think we see the HTC One and the Galaxy S4 in the spring, because it's so far away from Apple's window. They're not anywhere near it. Apple has originally announced at WWDC, and they shipped in June and July, and the last couple of years it's been September and October. Anything in those 3 months would not be surprising to me.
And
I don't think many people are expecting to see it's as unpredictable as the launch has gotten. It still fits into a rather predictable slot of 2 or 3 months. We used to be thinking maybe we'll see something around WWDC, but even WWDC has become a soft target right now. But it's first half of the year would be almost impossible to back as a rumor, but we still kind of know when things are going. I think it's kind of it's weird, but most of the other manufacturers seem to be centering around some window after Mobile World Congress. Nobody wants to launch a new phone in the middle of what used to be the premier event for mobile technology because there's too much noise there. But everybody seems to be huddling around that month or two that happens after it. Meanwhile, Google has their own hard scheduled event of Google I/O, which is when they almost always take the wraps off of the next generation of the Android operating system. And probably that's going to be when they're going to be showing off a new Nexus phone.
Or tablet.
Yeah, a tablet, but also they've probably have something that they're going to need to show off in handsets at that time as well.
And yet another wild card in the Apple Kremnology is that Apple has been behaving differently lately around the competitive environment. I mean, they got really defensive about the when the Galaxy S4 came out, and they had this whole ad that came out that said, "This is why the iPhone is really awesome. Remember how awesome the iPhone is?" I mean, this is weird behavior for Apple, and so they seem kind of rattled by the HTC One and some of the, you know, the new Galaxy, yeah, and some of the other phones. And so I don't think Apple is predictable as they used to be in terms of how they deal with their competition.
It's not so much different behavior, but it's behavior they only used to do in the Mac market and now they're doing in the iPhone, yep, market.
Right.
But the only way to get truly unpredictable with the phones is to go to multiple phones, because then you can have two or three different releases in the year the way a Samsung does, or another, or RIM is going to be, or BlackBerry is going to be doing. As long as there's one phone a year, because the realities of contract markets, they'll fall in the same window.
Yep.
And how about the new iPad? Is that, what's the date now on that?
I think the big one maybe still spring, and the
spring, like this is spring.
Well, we heard originally April-ish, if they can do it. The challenge with the new iPads is they have to make the iPad 5 the design language of the iPad mini. And previously the choice was Retina display, battery life, or the performance, and you could choose two of those three, and no, right, one wants an iPad that has 5 hours of battery life,
right?
So getting that into an iPad mini style package is hard, but we heard they were trying for April, and the Retina mini sounds like it's not possible yet, which means that would, yeah, be an September-October-ish device.
Could there be two announcements? Could there be a big iPad and a little iPad, separate announcements?
Yep, that's the advantage of having multiple products.
Yeah.
Apple, especially last year, they haven't shown any reticence about decluttering their release schedule, and simply saying, we've got one major product and we've got some software releases we can talk about at the same time.
And when's the Mac Pro coming out?
They said end of the year. We'll have some news for pro users end of the year.
And remember, you know,
by the way, I'm sorry, go ahead, Andy.
No, I'm sorry. I was going to make a wise-ass comment, and I bet you're going to say something more intelligent than what I had to say about the idea of...
Probably not. But what I was going to say is that if we think it's difficult to predict now, just wait till Apple gets its new campus, because their new campus comes with a shiny new room for announcing these, right, things. It's literally underground, and it's not, you know, we're not going to be able to see them putting up posters and stuff at the, right, in San Francisco and all that stuff. They're going to say, okay, we're going to have this event this afternoon. Everybody show up. You've got 3 hours to get here. And it's just going to, these announcements are going to come out of nowhere, I suspect. And that's going to be a lot of fun.
Especially those of us who are journalists on the East Coast, I'm sure.
Oh, you just come out.
You'll get a high-speed maglev right from Boston, right, to underneath the campus, Andy.
I don't think any of the four of us will ever be invited to these things.
Yes, it doesn't really matter.
I know I'm not.
I am going to do on Thursday, we do a show called Know How, where we show you how to do stuff. And I'm going to take my existing mid-2010 Mac Pro, which is the last Mac Pro. So it's almost 3 years old now, and put in an SSD card and put in a new video card. One thing I didn't know, but from the research on this, I found out, and you knew this already, Renee Ritchie, is that since 10.8 of Mountain Lion, you've been able to use stock PC video cards in Macs.
I've heard this. I've never tried it.
And, in fact, there's somebody in the chat room says, yeah, I've been using a NVIDIA 670 without any problems for some time, straight out of the box. Now, I went out and bought this ridiculously overpriced. It's like $150 more than the same card for a Windows machine. Sapphire makes a Radeon 7950.
You paid Australian markup for that
card. I did. I played Australian markup for it. So I'll put that in. But I might see if I just go out and get an NVIDIA, stock NVIDIA card. Run down to the store. Are there computer stores anymore? I don't think so.
Go to Egghead Software. No, they'll set you up.
Oh, shucks.
With a nice VGA, EGA card.
There's still a computer land in Berkeley, but I think all they do is fix computers. Anyway, if I can find one.
Most of the computer stores mostly sell like Halloween costumes.
I think Fry's is the last standout.
Fry's? I have to drive down to Fry's? Yeah, you might be right. I might be right, yeah. You want to take a field trip, Chad?
Yeah, we'll record it.
I wonder, I might be able to get it overnighted from Amazon. What if I order it now?
Yeah. When I built my PC, I did Newegg and Amazon comparisons, and Amazon seemed to be cheaper on just,
you're kidding,
everything.
No. I always thought Newegg was like the best.
And on top of that, I got free two-day shipping because I'm an Amazon Prime member, so they got me there.
So which one should I get, the Gigabyte or the EVGA or the MSI? They're all the same.
So many.
Same prices.
Simplify their SKUs.
All right. Well, I'll order this. Just, you know, it's an interesting experiment to see, right?
Just order them all, right? No, I'm kidding. MSI has been really good. I have a...
I think they're all the same. But yeah, you don't need Mac drivers. The point is Apple now bundles drivers for these cards. So if I pay a little extra, I can get it Thursday. Wait a minute. Isn't this Tuesday?
Mm-hmm.
What happened with the overnight? I guess it's too late in the day. Huh. Anyway, I didn't want to waste your time with that. I'm sorry. Well, I should do a Hackintosh. You could make a Mac Pro Hackintosh, couldn't you?
People do.
Maybe that's the thing to do.
There's actually a very, very rich culture of people that are absolutely need that kind of a tower Mac performance with current Intel processors. And having given up on waiting, there's a very, very massive culture on how to build those things with the support forms and everything.
All right, the Gigabyte I got. I could get the Gigabyte.
Mac OS will, there's instructions for making it run Mac OS.
All right. So that'll be another one. I'll have these cards. I could just use them. But can you make one with Thunderbolt? Perfect face for radio, and our chat room says you can. That would be what I'd want, is a Thunderbolt.
That's what I did on know-how.
You already did it?
Yeah.
But it was a Hackintosh?
It was a Hackintosh.
Why wasn't I watching?
I don't know.
Oh, I wasn't here that day.
Yeah, it's because I was
So wait a minute.
You
Chad Johnson,
day.
You made a Hackintosh, which you probably turned back into a Windows machine.
Right, I have.
But it had a Thunderbolt port.
It has two Thunderbolt ports. I got the Gigabyte.
The one I just got, the 670 or
no, that's the motherboard. I got the
680,
I think, actually.
Yeah,
you
of
do
course.
Video over you Thunderbolt,
do
Chad.
Better.
Say again.
Gonna do video over Thunderbolt.
You know, I haven't even tested it.
You can put the port in.
Yeah.
Does it work? That's another matter.
Because the video is.
Because I have a Thunderbolt display. Let's try it.
I made the Hackintosh, and then I am constantly in Windows playing video games.
I heard you need a separate pass through from the video card to send out the display.
There's some funky. Yeah. Yeah. There's a way to do this. All right. Well,
hey,
enough of that.
A Macintosh that looks like a classic NES console, that's what you got to do. It's worth it.
I will give you, a little preview, just a little preview, a little taste of what we're going to talk about on Thursday on the Know How show. I did, I bought, instead of buying an SSD that goes on the SATA bus, I went, Otherworld Computing has an Express Card SSD, and holy cow. That's the fast. It's much, much, much fast. It's like 60% faster than the SSD on an SATA bus.
Zoom, zoom,
zoom, zoom, zoom, zoom, zoom, zoom, zoom, zoom. So if you're gonna do one upgrade, that'd probably be the best one. Yeah. See right there. You just scroll past it. The Mercury Excelsior. Yeah, and you could put as sticks get bigger, those are just sticks.
Yeah.
So you could upgrade it down the road with more memory as the sticks get bigger. Not cheap. Not cheap. But it was almost $500 for 220 gigs. But boy, fast.
And once you do it, you can never, ever go back.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
In fact, that was one of the reasons I stopped using the Mac Pro, because everything else I have is SSD. Yeah. And you kind of get used to that. Now, waiting for, you can hear the drive. You know, it's like, I don't.
It's like going back on dial-up.
It is.
To broadband.
Speed is so subjective. Where you have all these really antiquated benchmark tests that will tell you how much it can do floating point, how fast it can do floating point math. When you realize that, well, most people when they're using their computers, all that CPU power, all those eight cores are basically spent flashing the cursor while it waits for you to type the next thing. And so it's something like a display refresh and hard disk access, drive access is actually much more important than raw CPU power.
IO is everything.
Yeah.
So. Interesting article in 9 to 5 Mac saying basically the Retina Mac Pro Retinas are junk. Don't buy them. They're horrible.
They're troubled.
I have loved mine from the day I got it. I haven't had ghosting. I haven't had any of the weird, as far as I can tell. I don't even want to read this too closely in case I do have it and I just don't know it. And now I'll see it and I won't like it anymore.
I have tons of ghosting.
You do?
I cannot go to Daring Fireball without the window looking transparent. But it doesn't bother me enough to have it changed yet.
The article written by Jordan Kahn, MacBook Pro with Retina display, problems in every dimension. Apparently, they use both LG and Samsung displays. The LGs have all sorts of problems with ghosting. Even the Samsung displays, according to this article, aren't totally free from
There was an update after that article that some people said it made it better, but I haven't tried it yet.
A software update?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So the ghosting isn't like burn-in on the display.
No, it's weird. Like, you just see the, if it's a light-colored image, you'll see the outline of the light-colored image on top of the gray that you're seeing on
but
the screen.
But it fades out?
Yeah.
There's an easy fix for it. Just bring back the flying toaster screensaver.
Apple actually has a support article, TP949 image persistence test, that you can run. A display might show a temporary faint remnant of a previous image even after a new image replaces it. Follow instructions using procedure listed for this computer at the Apple support article TP949 to determine if it fails or passes this test. Now, this is for the Genius to do,
yeah,
by the way.
They do like a checkerboard pattern that switches.
Yeah. Apple apparently isn't telling people, even though they've had this knowledge base article. I haven't seen it, so, but I know I'm going to see it.
For it. Yeah,
I'm going to see it, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to find it.
Well, if you have one of those Samsung panels that's good, you won't see it. But the problem is that the Geniuses, my understanding is the Geniuses don't know what replacement part they're going to get. So even if you ask for a Samsung,
you can't necessarily get it.
Yeah, and then some people had to switch multiple times and keep getting the same sort of ghosting panel.
This is apparently a problem with IPS displays, particularly this in-plane switching.
Especially the ones made by LG.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is weird. I mean, I have the same problem when I was reviewing the Retina MacBook as I did when I was talking about the Chromebook Pixel, where you have a lot of respect for the hardware. You think it's a very impressive thing, but I find I had a lot of difficulty trying to figure out for whom I would recommend this, because as it was, it's a very peculiar notebook that costs a hell of a lot of money, doesn't have a hell of a lot of features, has one absolute spotlight feature being that super high density display, but it's hard to know for whom is that display going to be justify the disadvantages and the extra expense. I really did like the piece that John Siracusa wrote a couple of weeks ago, likening it to that really high-end Ford GM's supercar that they make, knowing that the car company, knowing that this is not going to be the thing that they're going to sell in boatload quantities, but it's going to increase the luster and the allure of the whole brand. And hopefully this is going to be technology they can work out at this high end and then figure out how to trickle it down to the low end once it becomes more practical. But as it is, it's like, again, a really cool $2,500 laptop with no Ethernet port, but I'd much rather have the extra $500 in my pocket.
The moral of the story is ignorance is bliss. It's better to not know anything about these problems, better to never try.
I still think this is the best computer I've ever had, and I'm feeling like an idiot.
I know,
like,
I own it,
maybe
I still think that.
Huh?
Really? I own the computer. I have the ghosting. It doesn't bother me.
It's my main computer. I love it.
But here's the thing, Leo. You can't go back. I mean, if you look at a MacBook that's not a Retina display, it looks horrible.
It's like sandpaper on your eyes.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. I had the Retina MacBook for a month, maybe 2 months on loan while I was reviewing it. I could never go back to a non-Retina iPad. But a non-Retina Mac was, for me at least, no difficulty.
The thing is, like, I think Andy's right. These are aspirational products. And if you remember the very first MacBook Air, it wasn't right. It wasn't a great machine, but you could see where Apple was going, and now we have fantastic MacBook Airs. And you can see when the GPUs get better and the IPS displays get better, we'll have fantastic Retina Macs.
I think I have to admit it, that I've crossed some kind of spiritual and emotional Rubicon. I now have more money than sense. I bought a Pixel as well. And I'm just spending money like
the best web browser you've ever owned.
I know, but I like it.
I know.
Well, see, actually, I haven't got the Pixel yet.
Compared to the Retina,
I haven't got it yet. I'll let you know.
Oh, okay.
Because I got the LTE version. I'm getting it April 8th. Apparently,
it's supposed to be the same panel, but wider.
Yeah.
The problem with the Pixel is that there are not as many opportunities to show off that display. I mean, what really, really sold the Retina MacBook to me was the first time I was using Aperture and realizing that I'm seeing as I'm trying to figure out how to fix this photo, I'm seeing every micron of detail that's available in this dog's eyeball.
Final Cut Pro 2 is fantastic.
I like that.
Yeah.
I've had this photo. One of my favorite photos is a photo of one of my friend's dogs, this adorable dog. And this is the first time that I noticed that, oh, wow, you can actually see my reflection in the dog's eyeball. And that was just like, that wasn't one-to-one zoom. That was just like 8x10 image that was in there. Like, all right, I suppose this is a very nice display.
Yeah, I could never go back. I'm just so used to it now.
Okay. Oh, I don't feel so bad then. Because, I mean, part of the reasons I buy these is because I'm going to review them. Yep. I want to be able to talk about them responsibly. But then you get hooked. And this MacBook Pro with Retina, it feels like it's even faster than my Mac Pro.
It is ridiculously fast.
So all of the, so I haven't seen the ghosting. Maybe I'm not looking right. I'll look tonight.
I render Final Cut Pro on my MacBook.
Yes,
Pro more
it's
than my
faster.
Mac Pro. Yeah, it is.
There's also a you can put a thing in terminal to find out what panel you have.
Right.
Yeah. So
or even about this Mac, if you drill down, you can see right. what kind of panel you have.
Be happy, Leo. It's a good machine.
First chapter, Steve Jobs manga previewed online. I know this is one that Andy Inoko is fascinated by. Are you a manga? Are you an anime fan?
Not really, because I've had friends who've tried to like get me into manga, and at some point, either A, the story is all about the green, mysterious, glowy thing that represents the vengeance of the Earth against humanity that keeps trying to poison it, or it gets really, really creepy, and I have to burn it and pretend that I never actually saw that image.
This looks pretty good. This yeah. is by, it's in Japanese, by Ward.
I think that was the sugar water scene.
Is it? Oh, with oh yeah, he's walking in the woods with Scully. You're yes. right. Right yes. at the top there, yeah. Wow. I don't know. That's kind of cool.
It's better than the Kutcher movie. It has to
it's
be.
It's got to be yes. better than the Ashton Kutcher movie, which has now apparently just been limboed. They showed it at Sundance, and then they suddenly said, we want to put together a marketing plan for this, so we won't release this right
that
away.
70s show reunion is looking like a better idea.
Yeah.
We're going to delay it until everybody forgot what Steve Jobs
it was really was like. Like. Yeah. We're going to wait till Woz is dead so he can't say how stupid the movie was. There's the Aaron Sorkin yep. Sony version, which I presume they're busy hard at work at. But this looks better. There are no tentacles in this.
No.
No nuns.
There are spectacles. No.
And the eyes are kind of normal sized. I think that he actually looks like Steve, which is kind of nice.
It's a good job.
They even look like John Scully. I mean, you could identify it as John Scully from the picture.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
This looks good. I can't wait to read it. I hope that they have an English translation.
And on iBooks or Kindle would be nice.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice? Comixology, right?
Yeah.
Did you ask them at Comixology when you visited with them, Andy?
I did not ask them about manga. although they're doing some really incredible things. It's like they're moving. They showed me the last time I visited their offices was a year ago. So I got to see their new larger offices, which they're now moving out of because they're moving into even larger offices.
Wow.
In the next few weeks.
Comics have a future.
Yep.
They're doing really well. So long as they can get Dark Horse Comics in the stable at some point, that's going to run the table. That'd be great.
Real quickly, let me just run through a few stories. We got a bunch of students here in the live studio audience, and they're getting bored to tears. So I don't want them to get too. There's three young ladies in the front row. This is good. Like, when is this going to be over? I am not a geek.
I can go get my baseball cap and wear it sideways.
I don't think it'll help.
We don't want this warm.
Quicksilver's back. It's out of beta for the first time in 10 years.
1.0.
This is the program Alcor started writing, which I put on every machine because I love it. Then Google bought Alcor or hired Alcor, and another team took it over, as an open source project. And it's out, 1.0. And I immediately took Alfred off of my MacBook Pro with Retina display and put Quicksilver back. It's just a nostalgia trip. But yeah. I've always liked Quicksilver. I think Quicksilver is wonderful. So just something you might want to take a look at. Department of Defense will be purchasing 650,000 iOS devices.
They've denied that subsequently.
Oh, come on. Admit it, DOD. There is an OS X Trojan that Apple has blocked in their P-list already. Mm-hmm. So don't worry about it. It injects ads or forces you to go to pages in your browser. Han Hai posting record profits. Making Apple products, and I think that's anything else. The Apple tax. Apple says the reason why it costs so much for Apple stuff in Australia is because the rights. It's all the rights holders' faults. That's why we charge 70% more. Adobe probably says the same thing. We remember this was the conversation we had about Adobe charging so much for their creatives or for their software.
Well, the software has to be imported. It has to be put on a ship and sent across the ocean.
I have to buy a plane ticket.
It's the freight expense. That's it.
You have to print all those manuals.
that Adobe software is heavy.
Heavy. That's a lot of, yeah.
That's a lot of 3.5 inch floppies, man.
Eric Schmidt says it's up to Apple to get Google.
That was the worst story
now
of last week.
On the iPhone. It's not us. It's Apple.
Did you follow that story, Leo? That was horrendous last week.
So what happened?
So Eric Schmidt said that he was asked about Google Now, and it was at a conference in India, and he said, you have to ask Apple. And people started to wonder, what do you mean you have to ask Apple? Is Apple coding it? No. So everyone thought, oh, Google submitted it, and Apple put it in a drawer somewhere, just like they did with, you know, took their time with Maps, took their time with Google right. Voice. And then Apple put out a statement saying, Google Now has not been submitted to the store. So people said, Apple's lying. It's not coming as Google Now. It's coming as an update to Google Search. Apple must be lying. And then Apple said, we don't have any products from Mountain View in review. And then finally, Google came out and said, we have not submitted this to Apple.
Oh.
And finally, then some people started to believe Apple that really they weren't doing anything evil with Google Now. But after.
Right. Well, thank you, Eric. So Eric misstated the case.
Which he is wont to do. He's done this several times.
He's Mr. Foot and Mouth.
He doesn't get to go to the meetings anymore.
Yeah. I heard. I was watching Mac Break Weekly.
It's like we were shocked that Apple stopped using our Mac. Shocked.
I read on TMZ.com.
Okay. So there you go. So I. You know, if you want Google Now, get an Android device. It'll work better anyway because yeah. It's never going to have access to the things that it needs to have access to on the Apple side, in my opinion.
It'll be a neutered version.
It'll be neutered. Let's take a break. When we come back, our software picks of the week, some very good news. I hope I didn't steal anybody's Quicksilver tip. Nope. Mike Elgin in Valencia, Spain. Mr. Rene Ritchie from Montreal visiting via iMore.com. And Andy Inocco from Boston. More of MacBreak Weekly in just a moment. But first... A little word from Pond 5. You know, I was reading about the Fufara. You know, there was a company called iStock Photo that was purchased by Getty Images. And the guy who founded iStock Photo was later fired by Getty Images because he was complaining that it was that they took such a big stake out of it. And now he's starting kind of some sort of boutique-y stock image thing. And I had to think, boy, you know, that's why I like Pond 5. Pond 5, he was saying... We're going to, on this new boutique thing, we're going to give 50% royalties. Pond5's been doing that all along. That's what I love about Pond5. Pond5 treats everybody in the transaction with respect. What is Pond5? It is a stock media marketplace, media for people who make media, for both sellers and buyers. In fact, Pond5 told me that almost the majority of Pond5 users both sell and buy stock media here. This is what we call royalty-free. That means you pay for it once. You can use it in your presentations, on your website, in your podcast, wherever. They've got a huge collection. I'm not surprised because media makers love Pond5 because they get to set their own price and they get 50%. That's industry-leading royalties. You're going to get 1.5 million stock videos to choose from, 8.2 million photos, 753,000 vector illustrations, 383,000 music and sound effects tracks. They've got 3D models. They've got After Effects projects. And their browser makes it so easy to find what you want. Chad's using it right now just to browse around inside Pond5. Couldn't be easier. Every week there's a free stock clip, so you should go to pond5.com. This week it's Particles with Alpha Channel. I don't even know what it is, but it's a 1080p clip that costs you nothing. Look, I don't know what that is. It's pretty, though. You see, that'd be good for, like, your PowerPoint or your keynote presentation.
Green screen background.
And the alpha channel means that black part will be transparent when you bring it into...
Oh, dude.
Yeah, so you can put that over video if you wanted, like, some dream sequence or something like that.
See, you know how to use this stuff.
Yeah.
We got a special deal for you. When you go to pond5.com/MacBreak, they've got 50, count them, 50 free stock media files for you to use. All for yourself, forever and ever. Audio, sound effects, pictures, videos. It's a way, you know, you get two things out of this. First of all, you get this great library of stuff you can use. No, and the watermark's not in the stuff when you download it. But secondly, it gets you introduced to Pond5 to the media browser, sign you up for an account, free account, so that you, next time you need media, it's easy and fast for you to get an image or a sound effect or whatever you need from Pond5. You got to try it. Pond5.com/MacBreak. Pond5.com/MacBreak. Get your 50 free media files now. It's a limited time offer, so do not delay. Time for our picks of the week. We'll start to my left, Mr. Andy Inocco.
This is not necessarily a software pick, not even necessarily specifically an Apple stuff pick, but this is the Roku 3, which
I'm
very much in love with right now.
Me too.
Because it's got to honk off people at Apple that this is actually a little bit smaller than the Apple TV. Very, very functionally similar. You've got this streaming media box. It has got, you know, Ethernet, HDMI. Also has a a storage slot so that you can add your own media and add your own storage there. I love it because they've added some nice features with this one. New interface that's a lot easier to navigate. Also, the remote is really nicely done, where it's actually a Wi-Fi device, not an infrared device. So it doesn't really, you can put, if you don't want to have this perched on top of a shelf anywhere, you can actually hide it if you'd like, because as long as it's within radio distance, it'll actually work. So it doesn't matter where you're pointing it. Also, the remote has one of these on the side of it. It actually has a headphone jack. So you can be like in bed with your own headphones plugged in, and you're the only person in the room who can actually hear what you're doing. It's an interesting choice for someone who is an Apple person, because there will always be a definitive advantage to Apple TV in that it will always be an AirPlay receiver. And so that, I think, is if you spend any amount of time with the information that's content that's on your MacBook or your iPhone or your iPad, I do think that's a definitive advantage. However, the great thing about the Roku box is that they're a little bit more open in terms of the number of channels. You don't have a YouTube player, that kind of bites, but you do have things like an Aereo app. So once Aereo, that really great streaming broadcast TV app, becomes available in your city, and it's going to be available in 22 more cities by the end of the spring. I just installed it on this device yesterday, and the ability of I've attached this $99 Roku box to any TV I have, and now I've got every channel that's being broadcast. I've also have access to DVR content everywhere. It's such a nice thing. I think that Aereo, if you're in an Aereo city, that doesn't necessarily negate the advantage of Apple TV with AirPlay, but man, that's a strong counter argument to that feature.
Or if you're a Time Warner subscriber, because they have an app that gives you live TV on it, right, too.
And again, that really is like the systemic advantage of Roku, in that they are more open to third-party channels. They have a curated store of free channels with all of the usual suspects. That is already a large...
Including us.
Exactly. That's already a wider palette of options than you get on Apple TV. But also, you can get sort of off-books channels, including the Aereo channel, including all kinds of other features that will give you PBS and CNN and BBC International and stuff like that. So again, not exactly a slam dunk, but it's an interesting step forward. I keep saying that to finally cancel your cable subscription and get all your TV off the internet, it's not a single decision you make. It's more like it's a game you're playing in which once you get 100 points, you cut cable. Before I got Roku 3 and installed Aereo on it, I was at 93 points. Now I think I'm at 96, 97 points. It would only take one more thing to complete a piece of the puzzle for me to cancel cable now, and that's really due to Roku 3.
There's a Roku Channels database, www.roku-channels.com, that lists a lot of these off-book Roku channels. Yep. And in most cases, you just need to go to a website and enter a code to add it to your Roku. And there's thousands of channels, or hundreds anyway, of channels.
Yeah, and the fact that it's so open is the reason why it's so easy to it's so easy to sort of get around whatever limitation you think there is about it. For instance, no, you can't get AirPlay streaming, but what you can get is install a home media server anywhere on any of your Macs or PCs in the whole house, and now that can be a receiver for all of that content anywhere. So that doesn't negate the disadvantage of not having AirPlay, but in many ways, for many people, that's going to sort of equal the sort of features you're going to get from it.
Yeah, that's kind of the trade-off. Exactly. Is you don't get iTunes Store, you don't get AirPlay. It's not an Apple-specific device. My mom is visiting, right? She's 80 years old. She's a little deaf. I set her up with headphones in the remote control. She could turn up as loud as she wants. It's wonderful. She's got a little TV in her room. It's just great.
Yeah.
I love that. And the sound quality is excellent on the wireless. I was surprised. I thought there'd be latency or some degradation, but it sounds really good.
Yeah.
Impressive. Good recommendation. $99. Roku, ROKULabs.com. How about you, Mr. Rene Ritchie? What do you like these days? Not your Z10.
No, I do have a Z10 here somewhere. One of these pockets.
All Canadians have to have by law.
You have to have a BlackBerry. By law. It's part of our subsidy. It's like health care.
Yeah.
My pick is, it's not a new app, but it's a, an app that was updated today. I'm going to ask the chat room to help me. If you could at Rene Ritchie on Twitter, we'll demonstrate it.
Ooh.
But Twitterific, some would say finally launched push notifications this morning.
Ah.
They're doing it gradually because they don't want their server to crash and burn, overload. But if you install a new Twitterific and you turn on push notifications, and they've added almost little emoji-looking, I'll see if I can show any of them here, little emoji-looking icons to them. So you can see it's a little recycle symbol if it's a retweet. It's a little, here they come, little diamond if it's a
neat
mention. And they're doing, where should I hold this? This way.
Testing. There, what is this? Testing notifications for what program now?
Twitterific.
Twitterific.
Twitterific. And it's really well done. They're coming in very quickly. I like the little icon there because it shows me immediately what kind of message it is. Those are all mentions. There's a someone who followed me on Twitter is the green plus sign.
You could fill up your notifications pretty quick there.
you don't have to turn them all on. It's very granular. I'll open up the app so that you can see. But it's very. Like, the Icon Factory takes a lot of attention. They spend a lot of time on the details of the app. And they weren't the first to do push notifications, but they've done a really, really good job of it. So I'm going to open up the...
like that.
Sorry. Might want to change your passcode now.
Yeah, you gave away your passcode. But somebody's got
to
get your
phone. It's a traveling passcode, so it's not a huge deal. If I go to my account here and I click on my... where's my settings? Right here. Having user
error
issues.
It's nice you can get those server alerts without using any of your text messages you've got in your data plan.
You can. I'm doing a very poor job of it here, but you can granularly set which notifications you want. You can turn them on so it's just mentions or just retweets or just favorites. And they have another thing I should mention about Twitterific is not all Twitter apps have good accessibility. A lot of them render things to the frame buffer to make them move very quickly. Twitterific is using standard control, so all the good stuff that iOS does for voiceover support and for other support, it is all in there.
I learned that when I got the Retina display. I was surprised how many apps just kind of did a JPEG of the tweets.
Lauren Brichter, the guy who did the original tweet, he did that. He would just render. He made tweet for that, and it flows. The tweet
made bot it fast,
guys, so fast. But the Tweetbot have gone back now and added the accessibility back in. But the Icon Factory has always been very good about being really first class citizens.
I think that's the way you should.
And all that stuff. And a lot of people didn't go with Twitterific simply because it didn't have push notifications. It was like the last big hurdle, and now they've added that. And again, you'll get in batches. They're not making you wait in line. There's no queue. But you can enable it, and when they have the server capacity for it, it'll start working.
Tweetbot does have notifications.
Tweetbot
does have notifications.
They were one of the first to have a really robust, good set of push notifications for Twitter.
That's what I've been using. But I love Twitterific, and I love Icon Factory.
Design is just beautiful.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Flies. Yeah, it's pretty. It's
David
dark.
Lanham.
Love that.
Yeah, very flat.
Very nice. Mr. Mike Elgin in Valencia.
Yes.
What's your recommendation?
I have a very counterintuitive recommendation. When I was a Windows user, I was for 3 or 4 months before I switched to the Mac world from the PC, I was really getting into Dragon Naturally Speaking, which is a dictation software that lets you control your interface with your voice. And then I switched to Mac, and then, it's expensive, so I didn't buy it again, and so on. And then when Mountain Lion came out, there's actually built-in speech recognition in Mountain Lion. A lot of people don't know this is in there, and so part of my recommendation is for people to learn sort of force themselves to get in the habit of using speech dictation, because it's wonderful once you have that habit. That's the general tip. And look forward to Mountain Lion. Just hit function key twice, and you can start talking. And it's similar to what you find on the iPhone and iPad. It's not great. You don't have to train it. It works pretty well. But again, the biggest hurdle is developing the habit. My specific recommendation is that I finally bit the bullet and purchased Dragon Dictate 3, which is the current version from Nuance, of their speech dictation software. It's expensive. It's $200. The purchasing process is from the 90s, and it's antiquated, and all that stuff. And then you have to train it. So all those things are things that kind of have people don't do that kind of stuff anymore, especially since a pretty good dictation software is free in Mountain Lion. But I still recommend it for anybody who is a blogger or who writes or who does a lot of email or whatever, because once you've trained it and gotten in the habit of using it, it's fantastically good to be able to just talk and have things written for you without typing. It's also can be healthy because I like to sometimes dictate while I'm standing up. We all sit too much probably, and that's bad for your health. And the other benefit is that there's a free app that goes with it called Dragon Recorder. And what you do with Dragon Recorder is you open the app, you start talking, you can sit there and record for, you know, half an hour, and you're giving commands like, you know, next paragraph, and you put in the punctuation, commas, periods, and all that stuff. And then when you go back to your Mac, you plug it in and it all uploads, and then you've got the document that you spoke all laid out. So this is great also for exercise, because you can go take a walk, and when you come back, you've got a column written or a blog post written or an email written. So it's really fantastic, and for people who are willing to put up with the price and the training, there's nothing like it.
Very cool. Well, I have to say I've done it again. You know, I have, I think, an unearned reputation for when I buy something, then Apple releases the new thing. So on February 18th, I bought the entire Nick software collection for Aperture and Lightroom. What are you laughing at?
Thank you, Leo.
February 18th, I bought it. $300 for the full collection. Because I had bought it before, but I needed to update Silver Effects, and there were a few updates. So today, Google announces the whole collection, just $149.
Thank you, Leo.
Yeah, you could thank me later. Actually, the good news is they've sent out email, and they said, anybody, this is amazing. Praise Google. I was very worried when Google bought Nick. We thought they wanted Snapseed, which is the iOS app. And probably didn't care about these plugins, which many photographers agree are the best plugins available for Photoshop, Lightroom, and Aperture. Their Silver Effects Pro is absolutely the best monochrome plugin. Just amazing. And so we were all a little worried. Oh, my God, what's Google going to do with the desktop? Then they killed Snapseed for the desktop a couple of days ago, and I thought, uh-oh. Well, here's the good news. Anybody who's purchased Nick software in the last 5 years gets an upgrade. And those of us who stupidly purchased it for $300 just a few weeks ago get a refund. And I highly recommend this. The full Nick collection includes a bunch of plugins. U.S. customers or EU, but the price is $149. And it is just, you know, for Silver Effects Pro 2 by itself is worth it, but they have a bunch of other stuff. These are really great plugins at $149. You can try before you buy. Recommend that if you use Lightroom or Aperture or Photoshop. Certainly worth taking a look at. 15-day free trial. Thank you, Google, for not only not killing Nick software and not only dropping the price to half what it was, but for honoring those of us who've been spending money on Nick software for years. We get a little bit of a benefit.
Thanks to Leo for triggering it for the rest of us.
I can't believe this. I really don't think this is true, that when I buy stuff, new stuff comes out. I really don't. But if a Mac Pro comes out in the next 2 weeks and I've spent $1,500 to upgrade my old Mac Pro, you can thank me for that, too. Hey, I thank you for making the trip to the Brick House, ReneeRitchieEyeMore.com. If you want to keep up on the rumors about the iPhone and them, you just showed me something that is great, which you cannot put on this site. You got great sources.
And
great sources.
Can I get a quick plug-in?
Yeah.
We were thrilled. We had the chance to interview Don Melton earlier this week. If you're not familiar with him, he's the one who he was responsible for helping to open source Mozilla. He also made Nautilus for GNOME. And then he was hired by Scott Forstall, and he created WebKit and Safari for the Mac.
He's
and
the
then
guy.
The Tib.
Yeah.
And he was really candid. It's at imore.com/debug. He was really candid in the interview. He spoke a lot about how the project...
He's not at Apple now, right?
He retired last year.
Yeah.
He talked why they chose Conqueror as the foundation, like HTML, KML, KJS. All that
Conqueror
stuff.
Became WebKit.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know about spoilers, but I believe the Gecko code was close to being bigger than the OS X code when they were first looking at it. And that was a no-go for Bertrand Soleil.
Oh, so, this is great.
Yeah, it was a fantastic hour and a half, and we were really thrilled to have him. And if you're a fan of, if you use WebKit, which includes the Android browser, the BlackBerry browser, WebOS,
everybody
Nokia is changing to it.
Chrome.
Yeah, he's a guy you have a lot of thanks for that technology.
Debug 11, that's the podcast that Renee does at iMore, one of the podcasts that Renee does at iMore. And Debug Number 11 has Don Melton. I'm going to definitely put that on my phone and listen to that on the way home. That's great. Can't wait to hear that.
Thrilled to have him.
IMORE.com, folks. That's a great site. We want to thank Mr. Mike Elgin for making the trip in from Valencia, Spain.
Thank you.
So great to
have
you.
Thanks for having me.
You can follow Mike on Google Plus. Or just go to MikeElgin.com. It'll take you to his Google Plus page.
Yes, it will.
And anything else you want to plug?
Well, I'm now, in addition to Cult of Mac, Computer World, Datamation, and House, I'm now writing for Cult of Android. I'm sure this audience will be thrilled.
Do you have an Android phone?
I do. I have an Android phone and an Android tablet, and I'm looking at a Pixel. So I can actually I'm actually going to try to go all Google starting in a couple of weeks. 100% Google hardware, 100% Google software, and compare it to what I have now, which is 100% Apple everything, and sort of mix and match and see what the benefits and hardships are with that. It's going to be temporary. I'm going to do it for 1 month.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm kind of doing the same thing. That's why I bought the Pixel. I thought I should give it a try.
Yeah.
I tried Windows 8. Can't be any worse than that.
No, cannot.
Andy Iannocco, Chicago Sun-Times. He is the king of Mac analysts, and it's always great to have you on. Hatless or not, what is that? You took down the sorting bin that was on your iPad there. What was that? Was it Tootsie Pops?
I was at PAX East over the weekend, and so those are like gaming die.
Oh, they're die.
D20s.
Multi-sided die. Yeah, now I can see.
Like every color, every size. Wow. And, of course, this was just, like, one bin of, like, 40 at this one retailer had. Those are the only ones that aren't made out of, like, the bones of dead gods. They keep those under glass.
Thank you all for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC Tuesdays at twit.tv. If you can watch live, we would love it. But if you can't, we've got on-demand audio and video versions available after the fact at twit.tv and wherever podcasts are aggregated, twit.tv/MBW. Now, everybody, get back to work because break time. Oh, I forgot to thank our fine studio audience, Matthew Seth and his. And Matthew, what school are you guys from again?
Kimball High School.
Where's that located?
Tracy, California.
They were engaged. They were involved. They were watching. Only a few of them fell asleep. I was very impressed.
And they didn't storm the stage.
Thank you for being here. We'll see you next time.
You still have 30 seconds left.
It's not over, is it? It could happen. Thank you for joining us. Now get back to work. Break time is over.